Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 10th of September, 2024. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Di Shaw and Mandy Wood, and read by Judith Piggott and Rosemary Shergold. We shall also hear two poems, He Wishes for the Cloths of Heaven by W.B. Yeats, introduced and read by Jenny, and Moonlit Apples by John Drinkwater, introduced and read by Rosemary Shergold. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Cowley Road Carnival made a triumphant return after 5 years. Thousands of people lined the streets to enjoy the wide range of music, food, stalls and entertainment. The event ran from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. and was followed by an after party. A progression opened the event, which featured 25 groups and more than 600 participants celebrating the cultural diversity of Oxford. John, Magdalena and Paul, who did not disclose their surnames, joined the procession representing Oxford Rollers. John said they had an absolute ball. The procession was followed by entertainment such as improv comedy, belly dancing and Japanese drumming, as well as a fun fair, locals' food stalls and walkabout performances. Miss Kerr said, I thought the atmosphere was amazing and the organisers did such a good job. My family loved watching the procession go by and dancing along to the music. It was brilliant to see so many people in fancy dress, adults and kids, performers and spectators. Also a ton of different food from all over the world. It had a real party atmosphere and there was just such a positive vibe. It was a lovely close to the summer and I really hope it comes back again next year. Lucy Mozer, 47, who attended the event, said, It's very nice to see everyone clapping and dancing. I think they should do things more often. I hope it will be back again.
The gifts and benefits made to Oxford's MPs have been revealed. MPs are required to declare their financial interests within 28 days of the start of a new parliament, and they must also disclose any gifts or benefits they receive that could reasonably be considered to influence what they say or do as MPs. Newly elected MPs must disclose any relevant financial interests from the year prior to their election. Gifts such as tickets to football matches and concerts are also declared, as well as overseas visit cost gifts. For Oxford, the figures show Annalise Dodd, Labour MP for Oxford East, received £755 in gifts and benefits in the last year, and Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, Leila Moran, declared a total of £49,086 for last year. Of this, £41,650 were in donations, £717 in gifts and benefits, and £6,700 to pay for visits overseas. In the county, Lib Dem MP for Didcot and Wantage, Ollie Glover, declared a total of £66,262 for last year. Of this, £65,000 were in donations, £443 in gifts, and £819 for visits overseas. Lib Dem MP for Bicester and Woodstock, Callum Miller, received £64,000 in donations, and Lib Dem MP for Witney, Charlie Maynard, received £24,000 in donations. Lib Dem MP for Henley and Tame, Freddie Van Mierlo, received £49,100 in donations. Labour MP for Banbury, Sean Woodcock, received £15,000 in donations. In total, across the country, 498 MPs reported donations they received. There are actually 650 MPs. Labour MPs received a total of £9.3 million, the Lib Dems £3.2 million, and the Conservatives £1.7 million. Labour's Yvette Cooper was the top recipient, securing £393,000, including £210,000 from former Autoglass CEO Gary Lubner to fund three additional members of staff for my office over the next 18 months. Labour MPs Ed Miliband and Rachel Reeves each received over £300,000 in donations. The figures show Reform's Nigel Farage is the highest earning MP. He declared receiving almost £98,000 a month for presenting GB News for a reported 32 hours a week. A statement posted on X said, "To be clear, the GB News sum paid to me and declared includes VAT and was for several months of work. It was paid to my company, which has significant expenses." In addition to his work with GB News, he received £16,000 from the paid video app Cameo and £4,000 for writing articles for The Telegraph. Rose Whiffen, senior research officer at Transparency International UK, said, "Politicians should be careful when accepting gifts and hospitality from private interests. Enjoying the generosity of companies and wealthy individuals risks the appearance of benefiting personally from their public role and damages trust in the political system. Decision makers should ask themselves why they're being taken care of so generally and what expectations of them may follow."
Residents in Oxford have been giving their views on the best way forward with the £161 million railway station scheme, which has closed Botley Road. Earlier, it emerged that Network Rail bosses are now considering a series of options for the road as part of the scheme to revamp Oxford Rail Station. And one possibility, although it is the least likely option, is for the entire scheme to be postponed indefinitely due to soaring costs. In July, Network Rail announced the road will not reopen at the rail bridge as planned at the end of October, as it is not possible to complete necessary work on schedule. County Council leader Liz Leffman said she thought the road could stay closed for another year. Botley Road has remained closed since April last year when Network Rail bosses embarked on a project to revamp the station, replace the rail bridge, build a new platform to boost east-west rail links, and improve the station's western entrance. A rail insider told the Oxford Mail that three main options now being considered in review were: continue the work until it is completed, take a break so the County Council's traffic filters trial can be introduced, or postpone the work indefinitely due to rising costs. Now readers have been given their views on how they think the project should move forward, including one who said it was time for the work to end. He added, "The window of opportunity to complete this project has passed. In my view, whoever is working on it, managing it, have had their chance and are clearly unable to deliver. I think it's time for people just to kick them out of the space and take back control of the road, so we can get on with our business and general mobility. It's unacceptable to have to live next to a building site like this and be fed nonsense information about it indefinitely." But another reader disagreed, saying it would be best for Network Rail and its contractors, Kia, to finish the job while we are all used to it being closed. One contributor who commented on the Oxford Mail said it was clear nobody involved had the slightest idea how to complete this work. Network Rail have always been hopeless at managing major projects, GWR, electrification, West Coast upgrades, etc. One resident said he didn't care about the East-West Rail project. "I, as a resident of West Oxford, am so very tired of my commute to work taking an extra half an hour because I have to de-bus on the Botley Road, then walk to St Aldates and wait for another bus," he added.
A new multi-million pound park and ride site is still lying empty because it has no access road. All major construction work at the 19-acre park and ride on the A40 eastbound at Ensham, which will include cycle parking and electric vehicle charging points, was completed in January. But the 850 spaces at the £51 million facility will remain empty until the funding is secured for the infrastructure to connect it to the A40. The planning application for the park and ride was made in April 2021. And separate funding from the Department of Transport was approved in December of that year. The council also had funding secured for the connection to the site and other elements of the A40 improvement programme. These included an extension of the dual carriageway from Whitney to the site and a 4-mile integrated bus lane both ways from the park and ride to Duke's Cut Bridge just before the Wolvercote roundabout. A new roundabout was planned to create easy access from either direction on the A40. The scheme would unlock thousands of homes built in West Oxfordshire. However, in November 2022, there was funding inadequate for the planned A40 improvements, including the bus lanes and dual carriageway, but not the park and ride. Construction of the facility started in December 2022. And is currently being discussed with Homes England and the Department for Transport. Oxfordshire County Council said it was unable to share a delivery time until the conclusion of these discussions. It had been earmarked to open in late 2025. The permanent landscaping was completed earlier this month, and the County Council is now providing ongoing maintenance of the site as part of the current contract. Work is being carried out each week, including grass cuttings, topsoiling and seeding as needed. Some vegetation beyond the park and ride site boundaries has a lesser maintenance schedule. Further work is expected around these when site access and bus lanes are constructed, the council said. Further, the council said the park and ride would help reduce congestion on the A40 and provide a regular and reliable public transport service in and out of Oxford. Oxfordshire County Council estimates the facility has the capacity to cut up to a third of the peak traffic travelling in each direction on the heavily congested A40 between Whitney and Oxford.
Researchers at the University of Oxford have developed a new method of detecting fake vaccines. The first of its kind method proved effective in differentiating between authentic and falsified vaccines previously found to have entered supply chains. Professor Nicole Zitzmann from the university's Department of Biochemistry co-author, said, "This latest research will bring the world community one step closer to being able to tell apart falsified, ineffective vaccines from the real thing, making us all safer. It has been a tremendous collaborative effort, with everyone having this same important goal in mind." Researchers said one of the method's key benefits is it uses clinical mass spectrometers already distributed globally for medical diagnostics. With billions of doses administered yearly in global immunization programs, the world's population increasingly relies on vaccines. The vast majority are of excellent quality, but recent increases in substandard and falsified vaccines threaten public health. These vaccines not only fail to combat diseases that they have been developed to tackle, but also carry potentially serious health risks, possibly causing death and undermining public confidence in vaccinations. Professor James McCullough, study co-leader and professor of biological chemistry, said, "We are thrilled to see the method's effectiveness and its potential for deployment into real-world vaccine authenticity screening. This is an important milestone for the Vaccine Identity Evaluation Consortium, which focuses on developing and evaluating innovative devices for detecting falsified and substandard vaccines, supported by multiple research partners, including the World Health Organization, medicine regulatory authorities, and vaccine manufacturers." The method developed through the Oxford study distinguishes between authentic and falsified vaccines using instruments designed for identifying bacteria in hospital microbiology laboratories. It applies machine learning to mass spectral data to differentiate between authentic vaccines and those which have been falsified.
Members of Oxfordshire Deaf Children's Society explored RAF Rice-Norton and learned about the RAF during a recent visit. The children and their families were given a guided tour of the base in Carterton, offering a unique look into the world of aviation and the military. The visit was designed to be an engaging and educational experience for the deaf children and young people supported by the society. They were also given a tour of the Parachutes Training School, where they had the chance to jump from the fan descent trainer, a free-fall simulator. The Parachute Training School personnel also explained various equipment and their roles, describing the parachuting process while the visitors were on the back of a mock aircraft. This was followed by a science, technology, engineering and maths, STEM, activity with Squadron Leader Andy Marshall, one of the station's STEM ambassadors. The children and their families made paper aeroplanes, tested their designs with a competition to see which flew the furthest. Squadron Leader Marshall ended the visit with a tour of the station's Heritage Centre, which he curates, to showcase the history and artefacts since the station opened in 1937. Sergeant Chris West, Parachute Training School instructor, said, "It was fantastic to host Oxfordshire's Deaf Children's Society. We already knew they were going to be brave individuals living with hearing impairments, but they all went above and beyond that by trying out our parachute exit trainer, a piece of equipment I have personally witnessed a few soldiers massively intimidated by. I really hope this visit has helped inspire them to explore their interests further. Who knows, perhaps even in parachuting." The visit was part of the Society's effort to provide enriching experiences for deaf children and to promote inclusivity and accessibility in all areas of life. It works to support deaf children and their families across Oxfordshire, ensuring they have the same opportunities as their hearing peers. Anita Jack, RAF Rice-Norton media officer, who hosted the visit, added, "It was fantastic to welcome Oxfordshire Deaf Children's Society to a station. as this is something that is very personal to me with impaired hearing, it was amazing to have Children's Deaf Society here on station. It was fantastic to show total inclusion. Many thanks to all who made this day happen. The children and parents had a great time. The Society provides a range of services, including support groups, information resources, social events and advocacy, to ensure deaf children have access to education, social activities and opportunities.
A visually impaired woman is preparing to walk on broken glass to raise funds for an Oxford-based charity which has supported her with her sight loss. In January 2021, Claire Merritt was referred to an eye hospital after her optician noticed a cataract growing during the routine eye test. After her referral was delayed by nearly a year due to the pandemic, she received a diagnosis of angle closure glaucoma. The disease was already at an advanced stage in her right eye, and her sight has continued to deteriorate since. She found support through My Vision Oxfordshire, an organisation offering assistance and social groups for blind or visually impaired people. She said, "The My Vision groups are all about being positive. It's a great group and the events are also quite fun." On the 15th September, she will participate in the charity's Glass Walk fundraiser. She has set up a fundraising page which has received £190 in donations. She added, "My Vision Oxfordshire has been essential for my sight loss journey. The activities and support groups have offered me and many others opportunities to gain support and confidence. I'm looking forward to taking part as it will be a new experience for me. I'm also excited about being able to raise some money."
Visitors to the Bodleian Libraries can now explore the ceremonial history of the University of Oxford. The new 60-minute Ceremonial Oxford guided tour was launched in partnership with the Sheldonian Theatre on August the 30th. The tour includes a visit to the Divinity School, Convocation House, Chancellor's Court, and for the first time, the Sheldonian Theatre Auditorium, the principal assembly room and concert hall of the University of Oxford. The Sheldonian Theatre is the principal assembly room of Oxford, of the University of Oxford, and the regular meeting place of the congregation, the body which controls the university's affairs. All of the university's public ceremonies are performed in the space, including the annual Encenia, which sees honorary degrees awarded and the university's benefactors commemorated. When not in use for ceremonies, it hosts a variety of events, attracting musicians, writers, politicians and artists. For those looking to tour at their own pace, there is also a new self-guided Bodleian Libraries Sheldonian Theatre experience. Tickets for both tours are on sale now, with the guided tour priced at £17.50 per person and the self-guided tour costing £7 per person or £20 for a family ticket.
A bus museum will be offering free heritage rides around Oxford. For many years, the museum has given free heritage bus rides in the city of Oxford as part of Open Doors, which is associated with the National Heritage Open Days, and this year is no different. The Oxford Bus Museum will offer tours around the city on Saturday, September the 14th, from 10 a.m. until approximately 4 p.m. It offers 25-minute rides on historic buses, with the main bus stop being Bond Square. The Oxford Bus Museum tells the story of buses and coach travel around Oxfordshire over the last 130 years and features a unique collection of 40 vintage bicycles. Since 2004, the Morris Motors Museum has been located with the Oxford Bus Museum in Longhambra. It charts how these classic British and commercial vehicles were produced at Cowley in Oxford. The museum, located at Old Station Yard, Main Road, Longhambra, near Whitney, is a charity and run entirely by volunteers.
An Oxford researcher has helped to uncover the origins of a remarkable lidded urn which is more than 1,000 years old. The Galloway Hoard is a collection of ancient treasures which was discovered 10 years ago. The urn was found in 2014 wrapped in textiles, which themselves were considered an extremely rare survival. The lidded vessel, which contained a number of items, has been found to be of West Asian origin. The hoard is estimated to have been created around 900 AD and was discovered by excavators near Balmaghie in the county of Kirkcudbrightshire in Scotland. Dr. Jane Kershaw, an expert on Viking Age silver from the University of Oxford, said, "Taking tiny samples from both the vessel body and the niello, the black silver sulphide inlays that outline the decoration, we assessed the provenance of the silver. It was immediately clear that the vessel was unlike any other silver contained in the hoard. Instead, the results point to origin in the Sasanian Empire, which is today Iran. Elemental analysis using portable X-ray fluorescence revealed that the vessel is an alloy of silver and relatively pure copper, which is typical of Sasanian silver, but not contemporary European silver. In addition, the isotopes of the lead contained within the silver metal and niello match ore from Iran. We can even go so far as to say that the niello derives from the famous mine of Nakalak in central Iran. It's fantastic to have scientific confirmation for the distant origins of this remarkable object. The textiles were studied and retained for further analysis, and laser cleaning has helped reveal further details of the vessel, including crowns, fire altars, leopards and tigers. The imagery is considered unusual for Western Europe, with researchers stating it is associated with Zoroastrianism, the state religion of the Sasanian Empire in Iran before Islam became the more widely practiced faith during the 7th and 8th centuries. New scientific analysis has confirmed the materials used to make the vessel originated in what is now central Iran. Dr. Martin Goldberg from National Museum Scotland said, "We had suspected from X-ray scanning the vessel that it may have originated somewhere in central or western Asia, but it's only now that we've carefully conserved and analysed it that we can say this is definitely the case. The vessel will go on display for the first time later this month as part of the British Museum's forthcoming exhibition, Silk Roads, in London. Other objects from the Galloway Hoard will go on long-term display at the National Museum of Scotland."
Here is a public safety notice about carbon monoxide safety. Carbon monoxide, CO, is a colourless, odourless and tasteless gas that can be fatal if inhaled in large quantities. The primary safety measure against CO poisoning is the installation of CO alarms in your home, particularly near sleeping areas and on every level. It is crucial to ensure that all fuel-burning appliances like gas stoves, oil furnaces, and wood burners are properly installed and maintained by qualified professionals. Regular servicing of these appliances and sweeping of chimneys can prevent the build-up of CO. It is also important to never use outdoor equipment, such as barbecues or portable generators, indoors, as they can produce CO. If a CO alarm sounds, it is vital to immediately move to fresh air and call emergency services. Symptoms of CO poisoning include headaches, dizziness, nausea, and breathlessness, and require urgent medical attention. For more detailed information on preventing CO poisoning, you can visit the NHS website or the Health and Safety Executive's guidance. Remember, taking simple precautions can significantly reduce the risk of CO poisoning and protect you and your family. When selecting a carbon monoxide alarm, it is crucial to consider several factors to ensure safety and reliability. Look for alarms that meet BSEN 50292:2023, as this certification indicates the product has been tested for accuracy and performance. It's also important to check the date of manufacture, since carbon monoxide detectors lose sensitivity over time and should be replaced every 5 to 7 years. Placement is key. Detectors should be installed on the ceiling or high on a wall to effectively detect this gas, which rises due to being slightly lighter than air. Regular testing and maintenance, such as weekly tests and monthly vacuuming, are recommended to keep the alarm functioning properly.
On 9/11/2013, 2,996 people died in the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center in New York. 434 of those were firefighters from the New York Fire Department. A team of firefighters are set to climb the equivalent height of both World Trade Center towers as a tribute to all those who lost their lives in the 9/11 attacks in New York. The group members, most of whom are from Slade Park Fire Station in Headington, will be supported by firefighters from surrounding stations on the day and will undertake the challenge while wearing full fire kit and breathing apparatus. On September the 14th at Westgate Center's shopping centre, each team member will climb 220 floors on a static stairmaster to raise funds for the firefighters' charity. The charity supports fire and rescue service personnel across the country, as well as their families, with both their physical and mental health. Crew manager James Crook said, "Raising vital funds like this for the firefighters' charity allows the charity to continue to support firefighters and their families, not only when we need them most and when we are at our lowest level, but at all stages of our lives."
Oxford Playhouse is excited to reveal a host of new musical acts and performances that will play on the main stage throughout the autumn. The season of events will include performances from much-loved musicians and tribute acts, as well as award-winning and highly anticipated musical productions. Oxford audiences can look forward to a special evening of jigs, reels and percussive clog dancing as Catherine Tickell and The Darkening take to the stage. After a celebrated folk solo career, Catherine now tours with her band The Darkening, formed of stellar musicians from Northumberland, Scotland and England. Together they invoke the sounds of ancient Northumbria, connecting the threads of music, landscape and people over the period of almost 2,000 years. Named after the old Northumbrian word for twilight, The Darkening is formed of Catherine, along with Amy Thatcher, Kieran Zivrith, Joe Truswell and Josie Duncan, who come together to create an evening of music inspired by the countryside along Hadrian's Wall. The hugely popular Gareth Malone tours to Oxford this November with an intimate musical odyssey, Sing Along a Gareth, My Life Through Song. One of the biggest names in the choral world, Gareth is probably best known for leading the Military Wives Choir. In this new show from the presenter and choir master, Gareth brings to the stage playful tunes that he considers the soundtrack to his life. A joyful blend of biography and song, featuring pop smash hits, musical theatre classics, and some surprises along the way. Get ready to laugh, dance, and more importantly, sing along like never before. Paying glorious homage to the music of one of the most influential voices in British music, Sarah Louise Young, famed for her work with Fascinating Aida and Showstopper, the improvised musical, brings her critically acclaimed show, An Evening Without Kate Bush, to the Playhouse. Featuring some of Bush's classic hits like Running Up That Hill, Cloud Bursting, and The Man with the Child in His Eye, the show also throws in some unexpected B-sides and bootlegs alongside unique takes on songs like This Woman's Work and Babushka. The show comes after its sold-out, critically acclaimed Edinburgh Fringe premiere, London seasons, and UK and Australian tours. For those audiences who like a little theatre with their musical thrills, Oxford Playhouse is excited to present The Showstoppers with their improvised musical, as well as to host Heathers the Musical for a week in October as part of their tour direct from the West End. The acclaimed Heathers the Musical comes to the heart of Oxford after successful seasons at the Theatre Royal Haymarket and at Soho Place, as well as record-breaking runs at London's The Other Place. The high-octane black comedy rock musical, which won the What's On Stage Best New Musical, was created by Lawrence O'Keefe and Kevin Murphy and is based on one of the greatest cult teen films of all time that featured Winona Ryder and Christian Slater in starring roles. With 14 years as an Edinburgh Fringe must-see phenomenon, a BBC Radio 4 series, a critically acclaimed West End run, and an Olivier Award to their name, The Showstoppers first delighted Oxford audiences in 2019. They are now back with Showstopper, the improvised musical, displaying an ingenious blend of comedy, musical theatre and spontaneity. Created entirely from scratch through audience suggestions of setting, genre and style, The Showstoppers will devise a completely original and fully realised story on the spot, packed with dazzling routines and catchy melodies. Whether audiences fancy Hamilton in a hospital, Sondheim in the Sahara, or anything goes at the Ashmolean, they can suggest it, and the Showstoppers will sing it. Tickets for shows at Oxford Playhouse start from £14 and are available from the box office. Telephone number 01865 305 305 or oxfordplayhouse.com.
I would like to read you a poem by W.D. Yeats, which was published in 1899. It is essentially a poem about Maud Gonne, a woman he loved for most of his life, although she did not return his feelings. In the poem, Yeats is saying that he is poor, and no matter what he has, he feels that he does not have enough to win her heart. A very touching poem, where he is terrified that his dream of her love will be destroyed at any time. He wishes for the cloths of heaven. Had I the heaven's embroidered cloths, enwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim, and the dark cloths of night and light, and the half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams.
I expect many listeners can remember the first line of several poems they learnt at school. At the top of the house, the apples are laid in rows. It's perhaps one of them. John Drinkwater, a contemporary of Rupert Brooke, was a local man living in Piddington near Bicester for some of his life and wrote Moonlit Apples in 1917. It's an autumn poem, appropriate to hear in the second week of September. At the top of the house, the apples are laid in rows, and the skylight lets the moonlight in, and those apples are deep sea apples of green. There goes a cloud on the moon in the autumn night. A mouse in the wainscot scratches and scratches, and then there is no sound at the top of the house of men or mice, and the cloud is blown, and the moon again dapples the apples with deep sea light. They are lying in rows there under the gloomy beams of the sagging floor. They gather the silver streams out of the moon, those moonlit apples of dreams, and quiet is the steep stair under. In the corridors under there is nothing but sleep, and stiller than ever on orchard boughs they keep tryst with the moon, and deep is the silence, deep on moon-washed apples of wonder.
An Oxford researcher has welcomed the government's pledge to end badger culling within 5 years as it comes up with a new strategy to eradicate bovine tuberculosis, BTB. More than 230,000 badgers have been killed and 278,000 cows have been compulsorily slaughtered in efforts to control the disease, costing taxpayers more than £100 million every year, it said. The new holistic strategy includes a badger vaccinator field force to increase vaccination rates, measure to control cattle, a nationwide wildlife monitoring program, and a pledge to speed up work on cattle vaccine. It is the first novel strategy for controlling BTB to be introduced in a decade, the Department for Environmental and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, said. The package will allow government to end the badger cull by the close of Parliament, which could be in 2029, it added. The government has aimed to eradicate BTB by 2038 and hoped the new strategy will help England become officially TB-free, OTF, as well as protect farmers' livelihoods. Lord John Krebs, Emeritus Professor of Zoology at the University of Oxford, said, "The new TB strategy recognises that culling badgers is not going to eradicate bovine TB, because most new cases of TB arise from cattle-to-cattle transmission. This is a welcome shift in policy. Accelerating the development of an effective cattle vaccine that allows vaccinated and infected animals to be distinguished will provide a long-term solution and was recommended in my 1997 report. At that time, it was thought that it would take about 10 years to develop a vaccine. 27 years later, the government hopes it will take less than 5 years. An important missing piece in the press release describing the new strategy is an explicit plan to use more sensitive tests for TB in cattle to help eliminate the hidden reservoir of infection in cattle." RSPCA Chief Executive Chris Sherwood added, "This announcement is really welcome and marks a watershed moment in the fight against bovine tuberculosis. Bovine TB is an issue which is devastating to farming communities. For many years, we have been pressing for a more science-led approach to solve this terrible disease."
Oxford Direct Services, ODS, has been recognised for its work in protecting and promoting the welfare of stray dogs and responsible ownership. Oxford City Council wholly owned company, which runs a dog warden service, has been awarded the Paw Prints Gold Standard by the RSPCA after being awarded the Bronze Standard last year. RSPCA Paw Prints is the only award scheme of its kind in England and Wales, acknowledging the work of local authorities and public bodies. Councillor Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Citizen Focused Services and Council Companies, said, "Once again, ODS, working in partnership with the City Council, has demonstrated what a great job the Dog Warden Service does in looking after stray dogs and helping to find lost ones. Congratulations and thanks to all those involved in receiving this award. Andy Higgs, ODS Dog Warden, added, being recognised by the RSPCA for our efforts in caring for other people's animals is incredibly humbling. We strive to go above and beyond in helping pet owners and protecting the welfare of stray dogs in Oxford. I will always treat every dog in my care as part of my family, as we are privileged to receive such unconditional love from our furry friends. They rely on us to take care of their needs and return that love, and I'm genuinely proud that our dedication has been recognised nationally in this way. Ensuring the safety and well-being of everyone in Oxford, both human and animal, remains my utmost priority. There's been a 6% increase in entries to the Paw Prints Awards this year, which Lee Gingell, Public Affairs Manager for Local Government at the RSPCA, said highlights the crucial role that public bodies play in advancing animal welfare. He continued, "It's vital to celebrate the fantastic efforts being made to improve the lives of animals wherever possible. It's evident that local authorities in England and Wales are deeply committed to animal welfare. This is something we are incredibly proud to honour through these awards." The criteria for the award include whether the organisation has handling, welfare and behavioural training for staff, whether it has procedures to ensure sick and injured strays are cared for. It also looks at how the organisation promotes responsible ownership and provides a staffed out-of-hours service, clear and accurate record management and a rehoming policy that protects the welfare of animals. Since 2008, the award aims to encourage decision makers at all levels to recognise and value the local authority's role in protecting animals.
A new musical drama about a pioneering black footballer will be performed in Oxford during Black History Month. Show Racism, The Red Card, an anti-racism educational charity, has commissioned Our Little Hour, that is, Our without an H, Little Hour with an H. It will be staged at the Burton Taylor Studio, Oxford Playhouse, at 7:30 p.m. on October the 11th and 12th. The play will tell the story of black footballer Walter Tull, an orphan and grandson of a Barbadian slave. Written by Doogie Blaxland and composer Chris Anthony, it showcases how he rose to prominence against all odds. The first black footballer to play at the highest level of the domestic game in the UK, he also became the first man of his heritage to be commissioned as an officer in the British Army. He was killed in action just a few weeks before the end of World War I. Mr. Blaxland said the production celebrates the life of an extraordinary man whose pioneering spirit continues to inspire the campaign for justice and equality. He added, "It is also deeply fitting that the production will be staged throughout Black History Month and honour the memory of one of the most significant figures in British sporting and military history." Paul Cairns, Director of Operations at Show Racism, The Red Card, said, "This production tells a really important story, which will help reinforce the work that we are doing to combat racism."
Artist and TikTok star Sophie T painted a mirror she bought from an Oxfordshire charity shop and raffled it off to 90 fans at an art event. Miss T, who has more than a million followers, surprises fans with visits to charity shops each Friday, turning second-hand treasures into art. An estimated 90 visitors made it to the Blue Cross charity shop within the two-hour slot to await her arrival. Miss T, who has a gallery in London's Carnaby Street, said, "I started Charity Shop Fridays because I wanted to give back in a fun and creative way. There's something so special about turning an everyday item into a piece of art that someone can cherish forever. And it really helps to shine a spotlight on small charity shops, which are run by such hard-working staff and volunteers." Miss T's painted mirror, bought in Whitney, was won by Laura Clark. Shop manager Susan Palmer said, "It was such an amazing day where we welcomed new crowds to the shop and helped to raise some more money for the pets in our care."
Stories about the long-running success of Brown's Cafe have brought plenty of praise for the Oxford Covered Market venue. It had been set up by Catherine Brown in 1920, and despite changes in owners, it retained the name ever since. John Lowe of Kidlington recalls visiting the cafe regularly while working in the city centre as an apprentice electrician in the early 1960s. He writes, "The venue of choice was always Brown's. As the youngest apprentice, I would be dispatched early to pre-order Brown's speciality, toast generously spread with dripping, on large white enameled trays kept behind the counter. This tactic ensured that when my colleagues arrived, the feast would be ready for immediate consumption." The person who appeared to be in charge was a very tall man, always clad in a long white overall coat. He operated from behind the counter where he kept order among the throng of electricians, plumbers and bricklayers. Many other past and present customers are full of praise for Brown's, with plenty of favourable comments online. Among them is David Hodges, who writes, "My mum used to take me to Brown's for a treat when I was very young in the 1960s. I remember one very cold day having hot buttered toast, still the best toast I have ever had. My wife and I go there quite often now, and I still love it, partly as it hasn't changed much in my lifetime." Martin James is adamant Brown's served the best steak and kidney pies, bar none. While Anne Cohen says, "Late 1970s student breakfast fry-up after being out all night, the best." Susan Bruno recalled going to Brown's as a schoolgirl. She sat in the corner sharing a drink with four or more of her friends, with no objections from staff. "I also remember them giving us a cake, so lovely." Pauline Turner wrote, "We used to love going there as a family on a Saturday morning. It became a ritual to us. Great atmosphere and great memories." For Rachel Wilshaw, Brown's is my favourite place to have lunch in Oxford, and I've introduced it to others. While April Stevens is also full of praise. "Love this cafe, always has wonderful food." Gay Collett remembered her mum and dad having dates at Brown's, and love also blossomed there for John Day and his future wife, Jennifer. Mr. Day writes, "Brown's is by far my favourite cafe in Oxford. There's a wonderful range of food and the staff are friendly. Jennifer and I used to go there when courting. It was the site of our first date. We still love to go there. This year, the City Council, the market landlord, is staging a series of 250th anniversary celebrations for the market. A party featuring music and dance will take place in the market on Friday, 13th of September.
Local bands are being invited to play at a big birthday bash for the Covered Market. The historic market is marking 250 years of continuous trading since it first opened in 1774. There will be a free party inside the market on Friday, September the 13th at 7:30 p.m. Alex Hollingsworth, Cabinet Member for Business, Culture and an Inclusive Economy, said, "We couldn't let this special year go by without a big party for everyone to come together and celebrate all the amazing people and moments that make the market so special. We can't wait to see you there." Actors from Oxford People's Theatre will be strolling the avenues in period costume and leading a special market trail. Local musicians will perform, reflecting evolving music styles since the market began. These include early music performer Muses Kiss, who have been commissioned to craft a set to reflect the instruments that would have been played at around the time of the market's opening in 1774. Local folk band Milady Clare's Music will perform popular early folk songs and dances, and the Steph Pirie Trio will move into jazz from 1920s and 30s alongside Lindy Hop Taster Sessions run by Oxford Lindy Hoppers. There will also be a photo booth hosted by local photographer Jason Firefly. Multimedia artist Charlie Henry, who created the Uncovered Market audio tour, will be capturing anecdotes and stories from guests, which will be added to the Market's archive, which is soon to be launched on the Covered Market's website. And local historian Malcolm Graham will lead two interactive tours of the market. In 1771, the Oxford Improvement Act was passed, and plans for a covered city market were proposed to bring street traders under one roof and improve public health. A market committee was established, and John Gwynn, the architect for Magdalen Bridge, was appointed to design the market. In the 1840s, there was a partial expansion, and the market transformed into its current form, with Market Street entrances added. Last year, a £6.8 million package to revitalise the attraction was approved by City Council leaders. Market Street has been made more pedestrian friendly with extra seating and cycle racks. Tickets for the party are free, but they must be booked in advance and are limited to two per booking. You can find ticket information via the following link: wegottickets.com/events/627790. That's wegottickets.com/event/627790.
Various open days will take place at yards across Oxfordshire during National Racehorse Week. Trainers, studs and retraining centres nationwide will host a series of unique events from September the 7th to September the 15th, offering visitors an inside look at the care and training of racehorses. These open days will feature tours of training facilities where visitors can see horses in action on gallop, treadmills and in equine swimming pools. Hosting 300 people, Charlie Longston's event will take place on the 14th of September. David Dennis, a well-acclaimed jump trainer, will host up to 150 people on September the 15th at Wardington Gate Farm. And on the same day, Eve Johnston Houghton will host 225 people on her yard just outside Blueberry. Also on September the 15th, Ben Case will open his doors to 250 people in his yard just outside Banbury. TV personality Chris Hughes, who is a racehorse owner and ambassador for National Racehorse Week, said, "The impact of getting up close to a horse cannot be underestimated, and racing has created a unique opportunity through National Racehorse Week to help people meet these incredible animals, experience the life of a thoroughbred, and talk to the dedicated teams who care for them 365 days a year. It is fantastic that the events are free to attend, with everybody welcome to join in."
A sailor from Bicester has been recognised for his bravery after he helped rescue more than 100 people from a sinking boat. Tristan Tanner from Bicester was recognised among nine other sailors with the prestigious Merchant Navy Medal in a formal announcement on September the 3rd. Mr. Tanner was among a boat crew which rescued more than 100 people from a sinking vessel sailing by the coast of Italy. Captain Richard Gascoigne Kirby from Exeter and his boat crew of sailors, Mr. Tanner, coxswain Ben Owen Bramwell from Leicestershire, bosun Ashley Oliver West from Worcester, answered a distress call when a sinking vessel sailing by the coast of Italy issued its Mayday call. As the only vessel able to attend other than the Greek Coast Guard, the crewmen made the perilous journey in the Mediterranean in the dark of night and safely rescued more than 100 people. The four sailors have been commended for putting the safety of others before their own and for going beyond the call of duty. Captain Richard Gascoigne Kirby said, After half a century at sea from cadet to master mariner, working and living in an industry I care passionately about, I'm honoured and humbled to receive such a prestigious award. The award belongs to every member of my crew, who rescued 100 souls last year near Greece in horrific circumstances. This medal serves as a reminder that as seafarers, we may be called upon at any time to help others, and I accept it on behalf of all those who dedicate themselves to the safety of life at sea. Maritime Minister Mike Kane said, "It's fantastic to see these 9 remarkable sailors receive this very special award, the highest in the industry. Their dedication, bravery and fortitude is truly inspiring and shows the very best of UK maritime. I take pride in celebrating these individuals, as well as the many seafarers who make such a significant contribution to our country, both here and abroad." Sharon Coveney, Deputy Chief Executive of the Merchant Navy Welfare Board, said, "We are honoured and privileged to have such dedicated seafarers who work tirelessly to keep the global economy moving. The 9 recipients are all unsung heroes and are hugely deserving to receive a medal of this high stature. We are thrilled for them all. Their unwavering commitment and loyalty to the industry is truly inspiring. The sailors who were commended for meritorious service will receive their medal on November the 5th in a state ceremony."
More than a dozen rowboats travelled through Oxford on the River Thames as part of the British Rowing Tour. As many as 17 rowboats could be spotted along the River Thames as part of the rowing tour on Friday afternoon, 30th of August. Officials with the Environment Agency could be seen helping the rowers travel through Osney Lock on Friday afternoon. The rowers were heading towards Radley near Abingdon on Friday afternoon. People came from all across the country, from Bath to Yorkshire, for the rowing tour on the River Thames. The rowing tour started on Thursday, 29th of August, with the first day of rowing launching on Friday, the 30th of August, just north of Oxford. The rowing tour launched from Bablock Hythe, about 5 miles north of Oxford, travels through the Abingdon area, onto the Wallingford area of the Thames, and finished at Maple Durham, close to the South Oxfordshire border, near Reading, on Sunday, 1st of September.
Oxfordshire rower Frankie Allen landed an emotional gold medal at the Paralympics. The Wallingford sportswoman was part of GB's mixed coxed 4, which won gold to make it 14 years unbeaten and extend the longest winning streak in British sport. Cox Erin Kennedy, who has beaten Bess Cancer, guided Frankie, Ed Fuller, Jedra Rakusate and Josh O'Brien to a dominant victory. It was one of 3 golds and 4 medals on a magical morning for GB's rowers, and meant the 4 have won 25 titles in a row since 2010. Miss Allen is a 3-times world champion and 3-time European champion in the mixed coxed 4. Speaking about her selection for the Paralympics, she said, "This is a dream come true. We've done so much hard work to get to this point, and I want to make the most of all the experiences from now till the Games. The pressure of the unbeaten legacy in this boat is a privilege that I'm hugely proud to be part of." Ms. Allen's first rowing experience was age 12 in a single called Tinkerbell in Henley on a long rope held by her uncle. She went on to row at Pangbourne College and later continued her development at Oxford Brookes University alongside studying for her physiotherapy degree. During this time, Ms. Allen discovered that her disability, Erb's palsy, was classifiable for Paralympic rowing. Other members of the mixed Cox 4 have said, "Every single year we have been pushing ourselves on and we've taken trust from teammates before us," said Miss Rakowsite from Worcester, whose success came on the 18th anniversary of the car accident which left her disabled. "There has always been an overlap of at least 1 or 2 teammates from previous games, and we just drew on everything we could from them, trying to make them proud as well as our friends and families. The date carries huge significance for me, and it is now a golden anniversary. The Paralympics have been the second chance I always wanted to be an athlete, but when I was a kid, I thought that chance was taken away from me. Finding out later, when I was in my 20s, that I can still pursue my dream as a Paralympian was something I just latched onto and clearly didn't give up. After discovering a lump in her breast while on training camp in 2022, Miss Kennedy was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 29. She carried on competing during chemotherapy and, following a double mastectomy, won the 2023 European Championships exactly a year to a day after her diagnosis.
The Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service workforce has shrunk by more than a tenth since 2010, new figures show. The Fire Brigades Union collected the data and said firefighters are being asked to do more with less. Freedom of information requests by the union showed that 563 people were employed by the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service this year, including full-time and on-call firefighters and other supporting staff, such as call handlers. There were 89 fewer staff than the workforce of 652 in 2010, which meant the number of jobs fell by 14%. Across the 49 fire and rescue services to provide data, firefighter jobs have fallen by 21% in the UK over the last 14 years. England was the worst impacted, with 10,000 jobs cut, down 22%. In the same period, Scotland lost 1,400 firefighters. Northern Ireland lost over 200 and Wales lost 500. Matt Rack, FBU General Secretary, said, 14 years of austerity have devastated the fire rescue service. Every region has been hit, with 12,000 firefighters lost to cuts across the UK. He added that the rise in flooding, wildfires and storms due to the climate emergency means firefighters are being asked to do more with less. He said 999 response times are slower than ever before, putting homes and lives at risk. To protect the public, Labour must invest in the fire and rescue service as a matter of urgency. The figures also show a dozen fire and rescue services in England lost a quarter or more of their workforce. Buckinghamshire saw the biggest fall, with its fire and rescue workforce down 40% from 2010. The FBU has also found that 4,000 firefighters have both a full-time and an on-call contract, meaning that they will be counted as two firefighters in the data. A Home Office spokesperson said, throughout the country, our firefighters operate in uniquely challenging and high-risk environments, constantly going above and beyond the call of duty to protect our communities. They added, we will continue to work closely with stakeholders across the sector to ensure all services have the resources they need to protect communities at the highest standard. They said that fire and rescue services have received around £2.87 billion this financial year. Oxfordshire County Council are currently looking for only part-time firefighters. The county has 25 fire stations serving local communities and crews available to respond 24 hours a day.
Jeremy Clarkson has hinted when fans can expect to see the fourth series of the hit show Clarkson's Farm. The show, which started in 2021 following Mr. Clarkson's attempts to manage the 1,000-acre Diddley Squat Farm at Chadlington, remains a huge hit. The show has made stars of farm manager Caleb Cooper, land agent Charlie Ireland, head of security Gerald Cooper, and Mr. Clarkson's partner Lisa Hogan. Season 3 has remained in Prime Video's top 10 programmes for over 3 months since its release in early May. In a new interview with Times Radio presenter Kathy Newman, Mr. Clarkson, who opened a new pub the farmer's dog, near Burford 3 weeks ago, revealed it might be a long wait. He said, "We're likely to wrap up filming for season 4 in a couple of weeks. After editing and translating, it should be out around May." And he seemed to confirm the rumours of a further series after that, adding, "Then we'll kick off filming for season 5 shortly after." Mr. Clarkson has said that there will be a season 5 by sharing an image of the producer, Andy Willman, with his two dogs, named after Game of Thrones Sansa and Arya Stark, saying they were pleading to appear in the next series. Prime Video has not officially confirmed whether Clarkson's farm will return for season 5.
New research shows that older people can remember familiar pieces of music as well as young people, but some parts of their brains have to work harder to do so. Scientists from the University of Oxford and Aarhus University in Denmark have found certain parts of older people's brains are extra active when they listen to familiar music. The study, which involved 39 older and 37 younger adults, showed no difference in older people's ability to remember music. However, certain parts of their brains function differently than in the younger group, with increased activity in sensory regions and decreased functioning in parts responsible for memory processing. Researchers said this suggests the sensory regions were working harder to compensate for the reduced response in the memory processing areas. The researchers said music is a valuable way of understanding how memory and the brain work and could have implications for the screening of older people at the risk of developing dementia. Associate Professor Leonardo Bonetti, who led the study, said, "Music is a great tool to help understand how the brain changes its functional organization to support memory as we age. By following older people over the years in a longitudinal study, we might see how brain functional changes predict the probability of individual older adults developing dementia, which could have great implications for the screening procedures."
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.